Saturday, March 21st, 2015. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. Thanks for joining me today on RBN, whose website is republicbroadcasting.org. Other websites of interest are spingola.com, screeningsandyhook.com, and spingolaspeaks.net. During the program, email any questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by visiting spingola.chatango.com. My guest the first hour today is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, an internationally known expert on the problems associated with vaccine, and she is the author of Foul, which makes the connection between bird flu and environmental pollution, and Saying No to Vaccines, a guide written to help adults and parents refute the most common reasons to vaccinate. She also wrote Vaccines, the Risks, the Benefits, the Choices, a resource guide for parents. That was back in 2006. Dr. Tenpenny is a board-certified osteopathic medical doctor from Cleveland, Ohio. She is the founder of Tenpenny Integrative Medical Center, a clinic that specializes in holistic health and healing, including breast thermography, allergy relief, and bioidentical hormones. The clinic has seen patients from all 50 states and more than 15 countries. Dr. Tenpenny has produced many educational DVDs and is the voice of reason about alternative medicine. She is an outspoken advocate for free choice in healthcare, including the right to refuse vaccination. Her websites are drtenpenny.com, vaccineresearchlibrary.com, and the clinic in Cleveland is tenpennyimc.com. Welcome to the program, Doctor.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon to you. I rewatched the DVD, which was produced in 2003, Vaccines, What CDC Documents and Science Reveal. And you said at the beginning of the DVD that only about 4% of the people actually read any of the documents, actually were aware of some of the factors involved in the vaccines. Has that number increased at all in the dozen years since this video came out?
Oh, I'm sure it has. I think that when I started this back in September of 2000 was when I went to the first meeting, which was the National Vaccine Information Center meeting in Washington, D.C., and I came home and said, how did I miss this whole thing? I've been in emergency medicine for 12 years at that point and had had my own integrative clinic for 4 years. I grew up in a chiropractic family. I had not been vaccinated when I was a kid. I had all the age-appropriate illnesses like measles, mumps, rubella, chicken pox, pertussis, and really hadn't given much thought to vaccines. And when I started researching the CDC documents and reading all of those things and reading the articles from the Pediatric Infectious Disease Journal and Vaccine and JAMA and New England Journal of Medicine and on, I was like, how could it be that people haven't seen this? And now there was just a handful of us at that point in time that were really involved in digging the information out of the medical literature and putting it out there for people to know about and to understand. And for 2 years, I worked for a company called Apex Energetics, which is a nutraceutical and homeopathic company located in Irvine. And for every other weekend for 2 years, I was on the road for them giving conferences and seminars on the weekends about nutraceuticals and homeopathy and vaccines. And so it really started getting the momentum going in 2001 and 2002. And I believe now that there are millions of people worldwide, not just in the United States, but worldwide, who have taken the time to read the information. It is not bogus science. In fact, we've got over 6,500 articles on problems associated with vaccines and conflicts of interest and additional types of issues with adjuvants and fillers in the Vaccine Research Library, all from mainstream medical journals. And so to say that there is no information or that it's bogus science, it just means that people haven't taken the time to read. And I know that there's millions of people all around the world who have taken the time to read, who have studied, who've looked at the package inserts, who've read the VAERS reports, who have looked in all of the different journals and found these case reports of problems associated with vaccines and are much, much more aware now than ever before.
Indeed. Another thing that struck me in rewatching the video is the reference to shingles, that you said within 10 years that there would be a problem with shingles because people were not, say for instance, if you received or if you had had gotten chickenpox, and as a child and your children then had chickenpox, that it would renew everybody's natural immunity. But if that didn't happen, there would probably be a problem with shingles.
And it's actually happening.
We yes.
had the chickenpox, because how people maintained, if you had chickenpox when you were a kid, how you retained your long-term immunity was by being exposed to your children or your grandchildren when they had when they got the chickenpox. And what it actually did then was it caused you to re-stimulate your long-term immunity to the chickenpox, and that kept that chickenpox virus in check. Well, when they came out with the chickenpox vaccine in 1995, which was actually developed for parental convenience, because at that point in time, most all parents, mothers and fathers, were working full time, and for moms to miss work to stay home for a week to be with their child who had chickenpox, it was just economically not feasible for the family, and the businesses thought it was bad, so the government just wanted to make this go away. And so since that time, we are now rolled forward with the chickenpox vaccine, and we're seeing more and more shingles. In fact, there was an article that came out in 2008 in the Infection Control Hospital and Epidemiology Journal, and it actually said that since the chickenpox vaccine came out, in the first few years, they really didn't see any changes in hospitalization. But by 2004, hospital fees had increased by more than $700 million a year for people over the age of 60 that were now having outbreaks of shingles. So we are seeing hard dollar costs, very hard dollar costs, in addition to long-term morbidity, which is long-term problems and health problems, because of eliminating the chickenpox virus with the chickenpox vaccine.
Oh, my goodness. Now, is it possible, too, that a person who gets the chickenpox vaccine can shed some of that virus and just people around them can affect the people around them?
It's been estimated that about 3% of kids that come down today with chickenpox are from a shedding, from being around a child who'd been vaccinated with the chickenpox vaccine that then shed the virus, and the person next to them was it contracted chickenpox. The live viruses vaccines can do that. I mean, that's where the measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox, the shingles vaccine, the oral polio vaccine, and the flu mist, the intranasal flu vaccine that squirted up your nose, all of those are live attenuated viruses, and that you can't guarantee that every single virus in those vaccines are 100% attenuated or weakened to the point that they cannot cause illness. And we know that they can, and in fact there was an article, it was actually a post, and it was at St. Jude's Children's Hospital the question was, if you are on chemotherapy, what are the things that you should avoid? And it was a long list of things. One of them was to stay home, to stay away from public places. And one of the things that was actually listed there was that if you are under chemotherapy and you have cancer, that you should avoid recently vaccinated children who were vaccinated with the measles, mumps, and rubella, the MMR vaccine, flu shots, oral polio that is no longer given in this country, and chickenpox vaccines and people that have gotten the shingles shot. It's actually listed on the St. Jude's website. And so all of these things of saying it's the problem is the unvaccinated child, I beg to differ. I think that it's the vaccinated children who are shedding all of these viruses hither and yon and causing the problems that we hear the media harping about today.
Exactly. And you talked a lot about the herd immunity issue. And I mean, it just is amazing how they kind of twist things around. And they use irrational, flawed excuses or flawed justification for everybody getting vaccinated. And you also, of course, mentioned that immunization and vaccination are two entirely different things.
Yeah, immunization means that we've done something to keep you from getting sick. And vaccination is the act of giving a shot. And giving a shot, developing an antibody, has been defined as being immune when, in fact, it isn't. And that you can have high amounts of the IgG antibody in your system and still contract the infection. And so vaccination and immunization are not the same thing at all. And so that's really quite important for people to understand. The whole concept of herd immunity came out of the 1930s or the 1940s when it was observed that when it was observed by a physician in Massachusetts that in a community it seemed as though when two-thirds of the population had measles, it seemed as though the other third did not get it, and so it somehow protected the rest of the herd from getting sick. What I would say is that even that presence of, and so first of all, it was always intended to be about the actual infection. It was not about the vaccine. And the vaccine industry conveniently rolled that over and said, well, if we have a 90% vaccination rate, then that should protect everyone. In fact, we really want a 100% vaccination rate because we know at least 10% of the time the people that get a vaccine are not going to develop an antibody. And so if we keep everybody 100% vaccinated, that is somehow going to protect those who did not develop the antibody from the vaccine. Again, hence that goes back to what I just said, is that there is an assumption that if you get a vaccine, you're going to get an antibody. And the next assumption is that antibody completely keeps you from getting sick, which is why when you look at vaccine research, and they talk about vaccines being effective, people in the general population and people that are even physicians who hear the word effective, they assume that that means it works. And in this instance, it means it would keep you from getting sick. But what it really means is that if I was in a vaccine research study and I injected something into your arm, and a period of time later, somewhere between 2 weeks and, you know, several years later, I could draw a blood test on you and you would see an IgG antibody. Well, then when I injected that into your system, the vaccine was effective. It did what it was supposed to do, develop an IgG antibody. We have labeled that IgG antibody a protective antibody, even though there is a plethora of just a large amount of literature out there that shows that people can have high IgG antibodies and contract the illness anyways. So from a scientific perspective, yes, the vaccine was effective, but effective and protective are not synonyms.
Exactly. You talked in the video about the hepatitis B shot that I believe came out in 1991 and how totally, totally ridiculous it is to give it to a one-day-old infant, which that is so awful. That is just so awful.
Well, when they first came out with this, I read the original position paper, which was in 1991, and I had to read it several times because I couldn't believe that this was what they actually based it on. It was a 14-page paper published in around 1990, 1991, because that's when they instituted the hepatitis B vaccine for newborns. And the assumption was that because hepatitis B was endemic and in a lot of people in Southeast Asia, that 10% of the people in Southeast Asia were hepatitis B carriers, therefore we need to give it to one-day-old infants in the United States. They had tried to develop a hepatitis B vaccine from pooled serum and give it to a population that was at higher risk, which were people who used IV drugs, such as heroin and other types of IV drugs, homeless people, homeless alcoholics, people with HIV, and none of them wanted to take the vaccine because it was pooled serum, and they were concerned that a lot of times in that particular population in the early 90s, that people that had HIV or were HIV positive also had hepatitis B. So what they were trying to do was to take the serum, siphon off the antibody from the serum and inject that into people ostensibly to protect them. And many people were refusing it, saying, well, how can I be sure that you're not going to also give me HIV or I'm not going to be injected with that virus at the same time you're giving me an antibody that comes from somebody who may have had HIV and hepatitis B. So the whole thing sort of fell apart. So this was a new synthetically made vaccine. And instead of going after that targeted population, because of this one study that said that there was a lot of hepatitis B in Southeast Asia, they made the insane decision to give the hepatitis B vaccine to one-day-old infants, even to mothers who were not hepatitis B positive. And when they were questioned about that in Congress, they said, where's your research? Where do you show that you've done any sort of safety studies or any sort of research to say that this is safe for one-day-old infants? And I said, oh, well, sorry, we don't have any. We tested it on 5 to 10-year-old kids.
Ugh.
And so that, but it's never changed at all. And there was a period of time in about 1992 when the vaccine was, there was a problem with the manufacturer. They were changing the manufacturer of the vaccine. And when they started pulling it away from the one-day-old infants, there's a chart that's available. You can find it on the Internet that shows that this big uptick of autism and brain injury and encephalitis started in 1991 with the implementation of the hepatitis B vaccine at birth and the Hib vaccine at 2 months. And you started to see this graph go up. And when there was a period of, I don't know, it might have been 6 months, maybe a little longer, where they could, where the hepatitis B vaccine wasn't available, the slope of the graph started to dip downward. And then when they started putting the hepatitis B vaccine again at birth, that slope of that graph started to go up again.
Amazing.
And so when you are damaging children, and hepatitis B is the most neurotoxic, most documented, I mean, I have probably 100 cases from the medical literature of problems associated with the hepatitis B vaccine in a long list of neurological conditions that have been associated with this vaccine and written up in publications. It's the most neurotoxic vaccine they've made yet. And so now if you are damaging children at 1 or 2 or 5 days old before they've even started to develop their own intrinsic everything. I mean, when babies come through the birth canal, they're not adults, they're not little adults, and they have to switch over from everything that they were getting from their mother till now their own system outside of the womb and has to be fully intact. And so it's like a liftoff. And all of these things have to happen one after another, the immune system, the heart, the lungs, the digestive system, everything has to start working on its own outside of the womb and away from the placenta. And now within 48 hours, we are jabbing them with hepatitis B vaccines and vitamin K shots, which is synthetic vitamin K, and it has 9 milligrams of alcohol in it, benzyl alcohol in it, and the liver isn't even developed yet. And so to me, it would be like if you went to Cape Canaveral and you were watching the liftoff of the space shuttle, and just as it got off the pad and was just barely out into space, you took a 55-gallon drum of salt and threw it into the engine. And expected it to be okay. Like, nothing's going to happen. This is protocol, and this is the way it's always done, and this is the way we have to do it.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Doctor, we are going to a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Dr. Joel Wallach, author of the famous health lecture, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, presents his newest book, Epigenetics. Epigenetics is required reading for the very survival of Americans, and yes, all of humanity. Modern man has bet on the wrong horse to save them from disease and pestilence. The medical system has failed us fearfully. Join the health revolution. Buy Epigenetics today and receive a free membership to purchase all the products that Dr. Joel Wallach formulated at wholesale prices and receive a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. All this for only $25 plus shipping and handling. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311. Again, that's just $25 plus shipping and handling. And you'll receive the new book, Epigenetics, a free membership and a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case, and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money, has a storage life of 100 years, all for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine Now. Only at hempusa.org.
Americans are reeling from Obamacare, higher prices, and an epidemic of policy lapses. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com has you covered. World-class medical and surgery at one of Asia's most modern hospitals. 300 doctors, surgeons, and dentists serving 300,000 patients a year. Fractions of U.S. prices. Friends or family forced to go out of pocket? Avoid bankruptcy. Tell them to run. Run like hell. Hit us up now. We'll show you how. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com.
Earthquakes, hurricanes, nuclear accidents, terror attacks, and all-out social collapse. With the world today more volatile than ever, the future has never looked more uncertain. Survivalist Magazine is the one resource you can't afford to be without. Claim your free trial subscription now at www.survivalist.com and your first issue ships immediately. Get all the details and more at www.survivalist.com or order by phone. Call 1-866-437-6570. Your survival may depend on it.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today, this first hour, is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Her websites are drtenpenny.com, and please consider joining to get the newsletter. All you have to do is provide your first and last name and your email address. She also has the Vaccine Research Library, which looks absolutely fascinating. Do be sure and go to visit the website and look at all of the information, the resources that are there, and please share that website with your friends. Alrighty, we were talking about the vaccine, the hepatitis B vaccine, which it's a crime to give this stuff to little babies, and the vitamin K shot, and just the ingredients that are listed at the CDC. Anybody that would read those ingredients and still relent and give these things to their children, their infants, right into the bloodstream, without any filter. I mean, I just can't imagine. Of course, I did it. So, I mean, I can't imagine my doing it. I wish I knew then what I know now, but.
Well, I think that's one of the problems that people have, and I'm glad you brought that up, is that I think that years ago, well, let me say two things. One is that as recently as 1985, there were only three vaccines. There was DPT, which is diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis. It was MMR, and it was polio. And they spread them out, and not kids maybe got a few of them, maybe not all of them. And when they got the MMR vaccine, it was usually around 18 months instead of 12 months. And it was usually given alone. It wasn't given with a whole litany of other vaccines at the same time. And there were only those three up through about 1985. It was in 1991 when the big ramp up started. And now children get 49 doses of 16 different vaccines by the time they start kindergarten. And they get even more than that as they get boosters and get into teenage years and get Gardasil and Menactra for meningitis and Boostrix for, it's a booster for pertussis and annual flu shots. And there are more than 300 vaccines in the pipeline right now. And a good portion of those are therapeutic vaccines for different types of cancer. But about 150 of them are for different types of therapeutic things and about every type of pathogen that you can imagine in terms of infections, and they are actually going to be targeted towards adolescents and adults. And so it's very important for people to understand that by all of these things they're talking about now, about mandatory vaccines and removing rights from parents, there are 110 bills in 36 states right now trying to remove the philosophical and the religious exemptions. And people don't understand what the ramification of that is. By not getting involved with that, and even parents who are pro-vaccine and say, I want my, you know, I believe in vaccines and I'm going to vaccinate my child, but why is it okay for you to take away the right of some another parent that either that doesn't want to vaccinate their child for a long list of reasons, that perhaps the parent had had a really bad reaction when they were a child and they were really fearful of giving vaccines to their children, or maybe their first child had a horrible reaction, maybe so bad that the child died or had developed a seizure disorder or was on a ventilator, or perhaps received compensation through the injury compensation program. There was a horrible thing that happened as a result of that vaccine, and so they decided that they did not want to vaccinate the rest of their children because they were fearful of that. Well, what if suddenly your elected officials decide that you don't have a right to protect your other children under those circumstances, and you are required by law for them to get fully vaccinated with all the different dosages for them to go to public school? And that the only option then is a medical exemption, which is very hard to get. Usually it only happens, first you have to have a doctor who believes that a child should be exempt. Secondly, you have to can only get an exemption after you've been vaccinated with, let's say the flu shot caused you a problem. Well, you could get an exemption from further flu shots, but that doesn't necessarily medically exempt you from all the rest of the vaccines. And if you are a completely unvaccinated child that is completely healthy, on no antibiotics, has never been on an antibiotic, is on no daily medications, well, then there are no medical contraindications for you to be injected with something that perhaps your parents are philosophically opposed against. Sure. And if we give up our rights now to do this, if we, all of these pro-vaccine pundits and all of these parents who do not understand the ramifications, and I believe that they are not willing to look at the ramifications because they're guilty because they gave their children vaccines, and so if they're going to do it to their kid, you got to do it to theirs or to yours, and they're not dealing with their emotional piece of this. They're looking at we just have to get all these kids vaccinated. They are targeting a 90% or better vaccination rate in all age groups. And if we give up our right to refuse now, and if we let our state legislators pass these laws, then these next 150 vaccines that are coming down the pipeline, you're going to be subjected to them too, whether or not you want them.
Right. And the side effects are just way, way, way worse than the actual affliction, like measles or chicken pox. Those actually make you stronger and give you lifelong immunity. I mean, what about the measles scare, this recent measles scare? Do you think that is being used to force mandatory vaccines on everyone?
Yeah, we'll have a long segment to talk about that.
Yes, we will. Okay, we're going to a 3-minute break. We will be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Recent events have shown just how vulnerable we are to deadly viruses, bacteria, and fungus. These diseases are all caused by infectious pathogens that often get the upper hand on conventional medical treatments. Now more than ever, there's a great need for a product that will help protect us. Look no further. Supernatural Silver can provide immune system support to help fight off these deadly pathogens. Supernatural Silver is a new and vastly improved type of silver solution that's safe and extremely effective against 143 types of bacteria, both forms of viruses, mold, and yeast. Supernatural Silver can be taken orally or used topically and can be used in a nebulizer or vaporizer for inhalation. With over 180 scientific studies by independent universities, hospitals, and research institutions, Supernatural Silver is a powerful weapon against disease. Go to supernaturalsilver.com and use the promo code SILVER2014 for 20% off your entire order. Give you and your loved ones a fighting chance with Supernatural Silver.
Americans are reeling from Obamacare, higher prices, and an epidemic of policy lapses. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com has you covered. World-class medical and surgery at one of Asia's most modern hospitals. 300 doctors, surgeons, and dentists serving 300,000 patients a year. Fractions of U.S. prices. Friends or family forced to go out of pocket? Avoid bankruptcy. Tell them to run. Run like hell. Hit us up now. We'll show you how. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology, all while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
The IRS is a private corporation, not a government agency. Income tax is collected by voluntary compliance. To learn to unvolunteer or discontinue volunteering into the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com and immediately implement Strategy 1. The process must be repeated each and every time. Paper, letter, envelope, presentment, etc. Always and forever. Failure equates to acceptance, subsequent resultant contract, and you pay or go to jail by your own consent and agreement contract. Avoid recontracting. Visit escapeharassment.com and implement Strategy 1 immediately. Bar lawyers and accountants won't help you. Why wait? Get Strategy 1 and immediately implement it to divorce the IRS today and forever. That's escapeharassment.com, Strategy 1, to be free from the IRS. EscapeHarassment.com.
HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powders. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide only at HempUSA.org.
Alrighty, we are back. This is Deanna. Our guest the first hour is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Please do visit her website. It is drtenpenny.com. The Vaccine Research Library looks, well, very fascinating. I'm going to have to join that. I love to read and know everything that I can about this subject. The measles scare, and of course we need to also factor in the Affordable Care Act and how that will impact the possibility of a mandatory vaccination program.
This measles scare was just absolutely hype and hysteria, and I wrote a really good article about that that is on drtenpenny.com, which is drtenpenny, T-E-N-P-E-N-N-Y.com, just like it sounds, under the Articles tab. And the title of the article is Healthy People 2020 and the Decade of Vaccines. And when you read that and you understand that this whole process of moving forward this mandatory vaccination to take away exemptions, to take away your right to refuse, has been in process for 35 years. It started with the first Healthy People policy and guidelines that were established in 1980. And every decade they have updated and expanded the reach and the clause of public health. And in 2010, they came out with the Healthy People 2020 guidelines. And I believe there are 47 different categories and over 1,200 goals for changing public health in just about every area that you can imagine. And one of those areas is vaccination, and that the vaccination guidelines were to have a 90% or better vaccination rate all across the country of all recommended vaccines, all 16 of them, with minimal to no exceptions. These were put into place in 2010. Well, we're halfway through the decade now, and the World Health Organization had declared this the decade of vaccines with the help of Gavi, which is funded by Bill Gates, to put all of these things in place worldwide. So we're halfway through the decade now, and we were not coming close to those standards by implementing electronic medical records and tracking people. So now if we cannot induce people to comply with public health wishes by dangling a carrot of saying, oh, this is good for you, then if the carrot doesn't work, then you have to use the stick. And this whole thing, this whole media hysteria over measles, for crying out loud. I mean, we couldn't make it happen on SARS, bird flu, swine flu, and Ebola, but somehow we created a stampede of legislative action over measles. And so, I mean, to me, it just makes me shake my head. But the real truth is these are all the Healthy People 2020 guidelines and where they are going with this. And in my opinion, I believe that the public health has stepped far over the line, and they are no longer acting as guidelines. They are acting as dictators, introducing medical tyranny into our lives, and that they are superseding the doctor-patient relationship and not allowing the patient to trust the doctor and not allowing the doctor to make the decision of whether or not these children and adults should be vaccinated, because now they have to comply through these electronic medical records and these tracking systems. And I've heard all kinds of stories from people, you know, parents that are kicked out of pediatric clinics because they refuse to vaccinate. Well, is it really because they refuse to vaccinate, or is it because that little box in the electronic medical record that says vaccination record has to be checked with all the age-appropriate vaccines, or the doctors aren't going to get their quarterly bonuses?
Yes.
Because doctors are no longer independent business people running a practice and running their own business and making decisions which they feel are in the best interest of their patients. They are all employees. They work for big hospital systems, or they work for the government. They work for example, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, so they work for the Cleveland Clinic or the University Hospital System. They have quotas they have to do. They have to generate X amount of dollars in tests and referrals, and they have to complete their electronic medical records, and there are all sorts of guidelines that were set up for them. I also wrote an article about that, again, on drtenpenny.com under the blog area, talking about the problems of how your doctors, because of electronic medical records, are required to turn your information over to the government. So you think that this is, when you go to the doctor, you're talking to a one-on-one person about your health records, and the doctor's doing in their what they can in their best interest to try to help you get better or prescribe the next drug for you. You think that is just about what happens in that little 8x10 room with your doctor. Far from it. It goes into a huge data pool that is like a sieve. And Obamacare on healthcare.gov, I've been told that there are more than 1,600 different organizations and pharmaceutical companies and technology companies that can have access to the backsides of those records. Now, they may not have your exact name and your exact Social Security number, but it's all pooled data that they can figure out how well that they're doing and who is maintaining and taking all their drugs appropriately.
Wow. And then, of course, the insurance companies also have a say in what the doctor does.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, like if I want to order an MRI on my patient, I have to get pre-approval for that. You know, I have a gentleman that has severe back pain radiating down his leg, and he has a foot drop. And so, of course, he's got a neurological problem. I need to see what it looks like. But I had to go get pre-approval from that, which means one of my staff members had to sit on the phone for over an hour to talk to a non-medical person to decide whether or not, through their algorithm, if my patient met the requirements to get an MRI for his back.
Amazing.
And this is what happens every single day. every single day. In my practice, we don't participate with insurance. We've been a cash-based business for as long as we've been in business, and we maintain paper records, which we're very proud of the fact that we didn't succumb to the electronic records, because those paper records really are private, and the information doesn't go anywhere except to our chart rack, and it's and we don't participate with insurance, and so patients pay us, and we can have the luxury of spending 30 or 45 minutes with our patients if we need to. We don't need to have them out the door in a 10-minute office visit to meet a quota for my boss, the clinic up the street.
Wow. And when the digitized records, the idea of digitized records was first introduced, they made it seem like it would be a very big help for the patient. For instance, if the patient was on a vacation and got sick, then the doctor there would have all access to the records, and oh, they made it sound like something wonderful. But it has turned out to be, kind of a nightmare.
Yeah, this all started back in 2011. And they enticed doctors and hospitals to use these electronic records. And because they were really very expensive to set up, I mean, in our office, there was a point in time back in 2006, we had an office fire. And it was a horrible disaster, and we lost everything. And I mean, literally everything. And at that point in time, we had considered perhaps this was the time to consider electronic records so we didn't have to worry about paper charts anymore. But at that time, there were three physicians and two physicians' assistants working in the office. And in order to set up electronic medical records, it was going to be $30,000 per provider. So we would have had to spend $150,000 to set up electronic medical records. And so this is what happened to all doctors' offices across the country, and one of the many reasons why doctors sold out and became employees of systems, because they couldn't manage this. These were physicians who did take insurance and who participated with Medicaid and Medicare and all of those different insurances, that the first step was to say, well, you will not be able to bill insurance, and you're not going to get paid unless you file these things electronically.
Wow.
So then when they looked at looking at them electronically, it was this outrageous expense that they couldn't afford. So they said, well, you know, Cleveland Clinic or University Hospital, I'll use myself as an example, you know, here in Cleveland. They want to buy my practice. I guess this is the way I'll be able to stay in business. I'll sell out, and, you know, they're going to pay me pretty well, and they'll put up the funds for these electronic medical records. But it was the incentive that was attached to it that said that they would, in order to get those records, to pay for the implementation of those records, that what they needed to do instead was that providers had requirements to document a certain number of objectives and a certain number of conditions and how well their patients were doing, and were they complying with the drugs they were taking, were they losing weight, were they doing all of these different things, and those were called clinical quality measures. And they had to report those to the government in exchange for the government funding these electronic medical records. This is what's happened to our healthcare system. It's been completely co-opted by the government, by public health, who is now practicing medicine without a license, the drug companies who are dictating who's going to get what. I've said for the longest time, when we went through this whole thing with Obamacare, we really were not looking at healthcare reform. What we should have been doing was insurance industry reform, because you can have 30 people sitting in a room, they can all have medical mutual, and every single one of them can have a different policy in terms of what their deductibles are, how many people are covered, do they have out-of-network coverage, is lab tests covered, how big is their part of their plan for their medications versus their lab tests. So it's so complicated that physicians' offices that are still independent, I mean, they have to hire 3 or 4 full-time people, that's all they do is deal with insurance billings.
Wow.
And so we were completely co-opted. Medicine is now practiced by the drug companies, the electronic medical records, the very large hospital groups like the Cleveland Clinic or University Hospital, and every city has them. Even if you're in a rural community, your hospital is probably part of a larger network like Hospital Systems of America or something like that. and you are required to get these blood tests done, and you have to maintain these in these records. And like you said, it was initially said, oh, this will be so convenient for the patient. Well, my patients come in and say, it's so nice to sit here and you actually look at me when I'm talking and you actually touch me, instead of I go to my other doctor and the whole time that I'm in there, they're typing on a keyboard. They don't even look at me.
Wow.
So the whole system, in my opinion, should just be somebody should take a great big backhoe and kick the whole thing off the cliff, let it crash to the ground, and then pick up the pieces that are worth saving and were really good, and we're really good for patients and patient care and treatments, and we need emergency medicine and we need these many of these pharmaceuticals, but not to the level of which we have them now. Because when I listened to a lot of that those early Obamacare discussions that they had on C-SPAN, I was working on a writing project, and I had it on in the background and listened for hours to those discussions. And finally, it occurred to me after several days of listening to this, when they kept talking about these people need insurance and they need access, what they really meant was they needed to go to the doctor to get drugs. They needed to go and make sure they had their prescriptions and they had their colonoscopies. And there was not a word in there about health and diet and nutrition and smoking cessation programs and weight loss programs and hypnotherapy for anxiety. It was like there was nothing there to fix the problem. All we did was expand the problem we already had and made it bigger.
Exactly. And the and when you go into your doctor, they ask, do you want a mammography? Or they automatically assume that I haven't been to the doctor for a very long time. And one of the last times that I went in, she said, okay, it's time for your mammography. And I said, I'm not doing that. And she says, well, it saves lives. So she was very irritated. And she says, well, I'm going to write in your chart that you refuse to get it. And I said, go ahead. And they kind of get in trouble, as you mentioned, if they do not get their patients, if a doctor does not compel their patients to get all the tests that they recommend or to have all the vaccines and all the rest, then they kind of get in trouble because they're not following the standard of care.
I had a friend of mine who lives in another state who was turned into her state health department by a school nurse who said that she wasn't vaccinating enough kids. Now, she actually has a practice where she has a blended practice, which means that, you know, she talks to parents really about the pros and cons of vaccines, and if parents choose not to vaccinate, that's okay with her, and if they do choose to vaccinate, well, she's got vaccines there that she can comply, but she tends to tell them to spread them out, let's do one at a time, let's not load them up altogether. And so she does have a practice in which she vaccinates, but not, you know, she's okay if parents don't want to vaccinate. So the school nurse turned her in. She had the state medical, state come after her and said, we're going to take away all of your state-funded vaccines because you're not doing this appropriately, made the people in the other doctors in her office, because she has a fairly large practice, sign a paper that they would continue to get vaccines for free or they'd have to pay for them themselves if they agreed that they would have everyone comply with all ACIP approved vaccines. She refused to sign it. And then then all of her, you know, colleagues were like, well, you're going to really have a problem here. And so this is like, I happen to know about this person because this person's a friend of mine in another state. And how many places is this happening all across the country that we haven't even heard about? And this is why doctors are so militant about, you know, your kid's here, we're going to give them all the vaccines. It's like, and even if parents do want to vaccinate and they go, well, wait a minute, I just don't want to get five today. Can we just do one? And, you know, some of the pediatricians are going along with this. In fact, there was an article that came out probably within the last 2 months that was a survey of pediatricians who said that for the most part, many of them were willing to work with parents because they wanted to maintain the parents in their practice. Well, the public health department went nuts over that. How can you possibly do that? This is the schedule. This is the way they're supposed to be given. This is the policy. This is the way you should do this. I mean, it's like goose-stepping to the vaccination industry.
Unbelievable.
So for people that don't know this, this is really what's happening in the industry. And even parents, I believe, and even doctors, I believe that vaccines are do more good than harm, which that's not the position I have, but I believe that most people believe that. I do think that people should stand back and scratch their head and go, wow, isn't this heavy-handed? Why are they doing this? Well, it all goes back to the 20 Healthy People 2020 guidelines, the decade of vaccines, the Gavi funded by Bill Gates, and this is where our country is headed from a militant militant healthcare perspective.
Indeed. And then we also see many of the drugstores that have mini clinics, and you can go to the drugstore now and they want to vaccinate you.
Yeah, and that they pulled the pharmacist into this about 7 or 8 years ago. And because it was like, well, you know, they can administer all these other things, they should just be able to give a flu shot. Well, there's something to me unusual about why they are so insistent that everybody in the country, in the world, gets a flu shot, starting from 6 months of age and every year. Even this year, this past fall, when they said that the flu shot didn't work, it worked maybe 16% of the time.
And
then you hear people say,
but
get it anyway. Exactly. Get it anyway.
Okay, we are going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back and talk about the flu shot.
Earthquakes, hurricanes, nuclear accidents, terror attacks, and all-out social collapse. With the world today more volatile than ever, the future has never looked more uncertain. Survivalist Magazine is the one resource you can't afford to be without. Claim your free trial subscription now at www.survivalist.com, and your first issue ships immediately. Get all the details and more at www.survivalist.com or order by phone. Call 1-866-437-6570. Your survival may depend on it.
Recent events have shown just how vulnerable we are to deadly viruses, bacteria, and fungus. These diseases are all caused by infectious pathogens that often get the upper hand on conventional medical treatments. Now more than ever, there's a great need for a product that will help protect us. Look no further. Supernatural Silver can provide immune system support to help fight off these deadly pathogens. Supernatural Silver is a new and vastly improved type of silver solution that's safe and extremely effective against 143 types of bacteria, both forms of viruses, mold, and yeast. Supernatural Silver can be taken orally or used topically and can be used in a nebulizer or vaporizer for inhalation. With over 180 scientific studies by independent universities, hospitals, and research institutions, Supernatural Silver is a powerful weapon against disease. Go to supernaturalsilver.com and use the promo code SILVER2014 for 20% off your entire order. Give you and your loved ones a fighting chance with Supernatural Silver.
With autumn in the air, it's time to think about getting ready for winter. And it's time to save at HerbalHealer.com. You'll find amazing seasonal savings to prepare you for the fight against cold and flu season. Like Oregacillin to promote lung health. 30 capsules, regularly $34.95, now only $25. HHA Olive Leaf, the natural antiviral, normally $16.95, now 60 capsules are just $12. HHA Elderberry Power, a great flu and virus fighter, regularly $16.95, 60 capsules, now $10. Save on all our homeopathic detoxes. Choose from lungs, kidney, liver, brain, libido, or whole body, normally $26.95, now just $20. Visit HerbalHealer.com and click on the Fall Winter Specials button to save on all our natural cold and flu fighting products. Also explore our Herbal Healer Academy correspondence courses that teach you how to handle your health naturally. HerbalHealer.com, healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Order today at 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org.
Welcome back. This is Deanna Our guest this first hour today is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Her website, which I hope that you will go to and investigate, is drtenpenny.com. And I just think it's wonderful that you have an office where you actually treat your patients, where you actually talk with them and interact with them, and that you have not signed on to this demonic digitized record scam.
Well, you know, we've done a lot of things differently. I mean, I saw this coming down the pipeline back in 2002. I opened my clinic here in Cleveland in 1996, and in 2002 made one of the most difficult business decisions I ever had to make, which was opting out of Medicare, because it was heartbreaking to not be able to treat as many of our seniors by using their Medicare. Medicare was paying $32 an office visit at the time, and that just was not going to pay our overhead. But more than that was the onerous penalties. So, for example, if my front staff was busy and they were electronically billing Medicare, and perhaps they had reversed a number, and instead of typing in 1-2, they had typed in 2-1, that could trigger a Medicare audit. And if they came in to audit your practice, they would audit how many patients that you had that were Medicare patients, and they would call that number reversal fraud. And they would, and they could charge you up to $10,000 per patient on assuming fraud, and up to 10 years in jail on a clerical error.
Gosh.
And so, at that point, I said, "Well, I'm already doing alternative medicine. I'm already involved in educating people on the problems of vaccines. I really don't need one more thing to let one more flag on the top of my on my back." So we opted out of Medicare. And I see what's happened now with Medicare, and it's just getting worse and worse. They're constantly cutting back on the fees. I don't know how doctors that are family practice or general internal medicine and have a very large population of Medicare patients, I don't know how they do it. I mean, it's the only way that makes reasonable sense is that you've got to see people like every 5 minutes, and 5 to 8 minutes, and you know, people that are older tend to have more complicated problems, and they don't move as fast or think as fast or talk as fast, and you just have to hurry them on through. It's a real travesty. And you wanted to circle back just real quickly, because I know we're short on time, but about this thing about the flu shot. I mean, the flu shot has been published in many different meta studies, and the Cochrane Collaboration did a study, what they call a silo study, which means that they looked at every single article ever published on the flu shot in every language, including they translated 17 languages from, or 17 studies from Russian. And they looked at it in all age groups. And they concluded in all age groups, whether it's children 6 months of age up to 5 years of age, in infants, in children, in middle-aged adults, and in senior citizens. So basically that's everyone, that getting a flu shot is no more protective of keeping you from getting the flu during flu season than a shot of sterile water. It just simply doesn't work. And that what we need to do instead is high doses of vitamin D, make sure that your level is somewhere between 80 and 100, wash your hands, take vitamin C, get to bed on time, do all the things that you need to do to keep healthy from the inside out. And I've said for many, many years that, you know, flu season is typically considered to be somewhere January, February, which is the coldest season time of year for us in the Northern Hemisphere. And I always say that the flu season didn't come. What came was the sugar season. We had Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's, all in about a, 90-day period of time that these kids and all of the adults got pounded with literally pounds of sugar from Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. And then the stress of the holidays and everything that people run around and do for Christmas. And then in January, there's this big letdown, and then you get the flu. Nothing to do with the flu shot.
Okay, thank you so very, very much for being on the program today. I hope we can do this again.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Alrighty, bye-bye, take care. Alrighty, we'll be back in about